And welcome back. Hour number three for all of you, wherever you are around this ever more challenging world. Things are not getting easier anywhere. Meanwhile, the slaughter in Gaza continues, and no one will confront Israel. No one with any strength or moral conviction will stand up and say, this crap's got to stop. No, no one's doing it. None of the Arab nations, not Russia, not China, not India, and certainly not this country, because this country is bankrolling the slaughter. I mean, it's all insane what's going on out there. Truly madness of the highest degree, but it's organized and controlled madness. So don't expect Russia or anyone to stand up to it. No one's going to stand up to Israel. It's not going to happen. They are the controllers of most of life as we know it, and most countries as we know them, and they're not going to be messed with, or the Samson option will be brought up and mentioned again. You screw with us and we're going to blow up everything. That's what they'll do. I've said this for, honest to God, almost 30 years, I'll bet, that the people in control of this planet will take the whole planet down rather than give up control or have it taken. And I firmly believe that. Mitchell Henderson is back tonight, our Monday real history lesson with Mitch, and current events as they are. The Ukrainian government last week, the Zionist cabal that's running Ukraine, the Jewish Zionist cabal, threw out the top general and apparently replaced him with even a worse butcher. So things aren't going to change in that. They're talking about a years-long war now. It's not going to stop. There'll be no peace. And ask yourself this, honestly. How is Zelensky still alive? Think about that. How is it that shopping, recreation, movies, nightlife in Kiev and Kharkov and Odessa, etc., still going on? How is it that there's water and power to all these cities? Because Russia is not fighting this war to win it in a hurry. They're fighting on the basis of World War I trench warfare with high tech. Why? Oh, it's a wonderful laboratory to test all your new weapons out. Sure, we get that. But over a million white Christian men and women now have been liquidated by the Jewish government, in quotes, of Ukraine. All political opposition has been banned. The Christian church has been essentially evicted from Ukraine by the godless Zionists who are running it. This is all insane. And we are, this country, our alleged government is behind it 110%. Anyhow, Mitchell, welcome back. I didn't mean to ramble like that. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. You were speaking truth here, so... So tonight I'm going to start off by talking about the image of the beast, okay?
Right.
So when I drove into communist Nicaragua in 1987, me and my wife stopped at a motel about 30 miles into Nicaragua. War was being waged here, and it was not a good idea to travel at night when the insurgents came out. The woman who ran the motel wore a Fidel Castro outfit. She took us into the courtyard and waved her arms sweeping across the motel room saying, "Look at the beautiful rooms that the people of the workers' paradise have provided you, the people's guests." It was an unsightly mess. She opened the door to our room and proclaimed, "The workers have toiled to provide you with your own little piece of paradise." It was a dive. She opened the balcony door and swept her arm to reveal the view, saying, "Look at the natural beauty of our workers' paradise. The panorama before us was a pig farm with mud, swill, and the characteristic stench of such places." So flash forward to now. Alejandro Mayorkas says the U.S. border is under control. Janet Yellen says the U.S. economy is booming and that we have had the best economic recovery in American history. Merrick Garland tells us that we have historically low crime. Anthony Blinken tells us that the Middle East is more peaceful now than in recent memory. These people are all Jews, okay? Biden tells us that he has fixed and healed the nation. We have never had it so good. Biden has his main political opponent arrested and charged with 91 criminal cases, but tells us that we must vote for him in order to save democracy. He tells African-Americans that they, if they don't vote for him, they are not black, an offhanded way of calling them Uncle Toms. These are obvious lies, spoken as gospel truth. The Antichrist lies are brazen. They either lie to you when the truth is apparently the opposite of what they say, or they tell you the truth when they think it is not going to be understood. This is the thing that con men like to do when they are sure that everyone is fooled. They tell you the truth because they know you will not understand it. Michelle and Barack Obama are telling you the truth that they are sure you will not understand in their movie, Leave the World Behind. In the movie, Julia Roberts is an advertising executive. She says that her job is to convince people to buy things that they do not need. Everyone is her target audience, and she thinks they are pathetic. The camera closes in on her face, and she says, quote, "I fucking hate people." This is the global elite's attitude towards all of us. Why they want 7.5 billion of us exterminated. So the family arrives at a rental place for vacation, and everyone is absorbed into social media. Cable TV is out, leaving their daughter, Rose, without her preferred entertainment. Everyone is absorbed into their social media that Rose feels so absorbed that Rose feels like nobody loves her and no one pays attention to her. There is an EMP attack and all communications are down. The owner of the house returns with his daughter because everything is shut down. Without social media to distract them, there is tension between the black homeowner and the white renters. They begin venturing out in order to find out what is happening. Julia Roberts' husband, Ethan Hawke, runs across a frantic woman who's asking for help but only speaks Spanish. He drives off and abandons her to her fate. So the black homeowner and Ethan Hawke go to another neighbor's house to try to get medicine for Hawke's son. The neighbor is a white guy, Kevin Bacon, who threatens to shoot them if they don't leave. The implications is that Kevin Baker is a white survivalist. Ethan Hawke steps in and tells Kevin Bacon, "I am worthless without my cell phone, GPS, or laptop." The implication here is that social media has become so integral to our lives is an inseparable part of us. Without it, whites are against Hispanics and blacks are against the whites. It is social media that enables us to live together.
Mitch, it's almost like what you're describing here is I won't have any problem saying it sounds like a new world religion. Think about it.
Yes.
The religion of digital advanced connectivity and social media platforms. It's a religious movement. People are utterly addicted to it. Totally believers in it.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to. But it just, is a big deal.
So this is an inversion of how an individual coming to the truth is an epiphany, and us collectively coming to the truth is revelation, because that is what the word revelation means, the disclosing of something that was previously obscure, reality. In this inversion of the epiphany revelation, the Obama's characters are finding out that they individually depend upon the media for everything, and that we need the media in order to function collectively as a society. There are only two worlds, the real world that God made and controls, and the counterfeit world that the Jews have constructed through media and entertainment to enslave us. The Obamas want you in the Jewish fantasy world that empowers them. But the Obamas are arrogantly telling you the truth. While the others are exploring to find out what is going on, Rose wanders off to a neighbor's house. This final act is called Alone. Rose finds a bunker in the neighbor's house with everything they need to live. There is a big screen TV and a DVD player. Rose turns it on. She selects the final episode of the TV show Friends and tunes it in. The final frame is Rose watching Friends totally absorbed. absorbed in it and not worrying about what is going on in the world. She has dropped out. She has left the world behind. This is Marshall McLuhan's prediction that media would totally absorb people's attention through radio, television, cable TV, and the Internet. In his book, The Medium is the Message, he observed that the medium through which we choose to communicate holds more value than the message itself. They recognized that Hitler's messages to the German people were amplified by the radio. They marveled at the possibility that television would bring. They saw that TV, what TV did during the Vietnam War by bringing the war into everybody's living room and causing the defeat of American foreign policy in Southeast Asia. They looked forward to what the power of further developments in the medium would bring. Consider this family. They all turned on their devices, tuned in to what they were individually interested in, and then dropped out, each going into their own world. McLuhan said in 1964 that we would all turn on, tune in, and drop out and leave the world behind, just like Rose did. In 2003, I purchased a new home in a nice suburban neighborhood. In the living room, I put an entertainment center with a large TV and VCR player with a stereo system. I had noticed in Latin America that most households had a small altar devoted to the Virgin Mary. In Japan, I saw many houses with a dedicated Shinto altar. In Korea, they had altars dedicated to the Buddha. This is where they worshipped. It was clear to me that Westerners worshipped in front of their entertainment center. The fact is that what you worship is what you give your attention to. Back in the days of the TV, the average person spent 40 hours a week in front of the TV and 1 hour a week in church, if at all. Now look around you. Everybody is on their smartphones wherever they are. So my young son asked me what the altar was that I was putting in the living room. I do not believe in lying to my children. I told him that this was the altar before which Americans worship their God, where they spend most of their time in their lives when they are not working. In the end times, the image of the beast appears alive and can speak, and all will worship the image of the beast. We are not moving things on our media? Does it not speak? Do we not carry it everywhere all of the time and give it our attention? The prophet Esdras in the Old Testament said that in the end times, the stones shall speak. Stones are silicon dioxide, electronic chips made from silicon. Does not silicon in your smartphone speak? Yes, it does. I'm using silicon right now to talk to you. Do we not let this media program us all day long? Do we not worship the idols in all forms of media? Consider Taylor Swift. Time magazine named her Person of the Year. People gush over her. I have even seen Protestant ministers write about her concerts as if it was a religious experience. The gospel, according to Taylor Swift, she can lead you to truth and life. This is bullshit. This is good marketing. Taylor Swift is a nominal Christian at best. She is an advocate for LGBT causes, and she supports the disgusting pedophile Joe Biden. She writes songs supporting gay people. Her songs are generally all the same. She's a pretty girl, but not a beautiful woman. I would just give her a 6. She's a perfect example of illusion over substance. Her marketing of herself has made her a billionaire. Okay, her talent is marketing. Her talent is showmanship. Can you be Taylor Swift? Marshall McLuhan also told Andy Warhol that we would all be able to have our 15 minutes of fame. This is another way media drives our world. Some get their 15 minutes of fame committing a crime and putting it on YouTube. For example, the black and Hispanic kids that recorded themselves running over a white guy on a bike and killing him in Las Vegas posted it to social media. Others become influencers on YouTube, and others do music by doing covers of others' songs. The counterfeit reality that we all live in is a Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality. This is how they enslave you. The real reality is drastically different from what you think because you have been programmed into the Jewish counterfeit reality all of your life. We all unthinkingly acquiesce to the Jewish counterfeit reality that we were born into. This world that we accept is the Antichrist world. Jews have always been against Christ. We are constantly manipulated with untold, unfounded bullshit threats. Global warming is going to kill us all in 50 years. Nuclear war will exterminate humanity. Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea will invade us and take us over. January 6th was an insurrection and worse than Pearl Harbor or 9/11. White nationalism is a threat to our democracy. Space aliens will invade and exterminate us. Guns will kill all our children. Then what will pedophiles and drag queens do? Notice that these problems only get worse and multiply. None of it makes sense. We seem not to be able to fix any problem. Hell is the impossibility of reason. What you see around you now is hell. Fear is the currency of control. Our faith in humans and human institutions is vain. Human institutions are empty and will always let us down. We are seeing that clearly. Revelation. Revelation means a revealing, and we can see that the emperor has no clothes. There's a way out because it is all lies and all bullshit all of the time. It is an illusion, and all within it are delusional. But you must come to grips that it is all lies and that everything you think is important is not. And reality is 180 degrees opposite of the Jewish counterfeit reality.
Yes.
Keep in mind that you are not allowed to criticize the Jews who constructed this counterfeit reality. They are obviously the ones in control of the lies. So how to wake up? What do the Jews hate? What does the Antichrist hate? Christ. Okay? And let me just finish off by this, just to drive this home. Listen to the people around you. They sit in front of their TVs all day. They look at their social media all day. And what do they gush on about? I saw some lady talking about, who went to the game, Super Bowl yesterday, and she said, I hope Taylor Swift was happy with the outcome of the game.
Gosh.
You know, who gives a shit what Taylor Swift thinks? That is worshiping an idolatry of just some sort of medium type person.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Who's
and
really a good marketer.
And what else? What else, Mitch? Her boyfriend, the alleged boyfriend, Travis Kelce, is the Pfizer bioweapon injection poster boy. He's pushing it. Come on.
Yes.
And by virtue of her boyfriend, they're pushing genocide. Come on. This is sickening.
Oh, yes, yes. This is the entertainment. This is the circuses while Rome burns, you see.
Right.
That's what's going on here. All right. And none of it makes sense. See, they will not fix the border. They will not fix crime. And you just look at them. It's like there is an impossibility of reason. And that's what puts you into hell, is that impossibility of reason. Okay. That's where we're at. It's just going to get worse. Okay. Next book, I'll talk a little bit more on that, because all this is very intentional. It is. They're doing exactly what they want to do.
The plan, all by the plan.
Yep. So, let me talk now about survival driving, okay?
Survival driving. All right, hold on. We got a break coming up in just a minute, Mitch. Let's hold off on that.
Okay, sure.
Here's the deal. A lot of people driving are legitimately driving impaired with prion damage to their brains. We just read a whole bunch of stories in the last hour about people who cannot even one woman said she can't remember that she divorced her husband 10 years ago and has been remarried to a new guy for 10 years. She says, I still cry when I think about my husband and I can't figure out why we're not together. She's lost her biographical memory. It's strange. And these people driving like that, Mitch, there are apparently a hell of a lot of people who get lost when they leave home. They can't find their way home. They go out for a walk. One guy wrote, I went out for a walk with my dogs. I couldn't find my way home. Thank God I had my cell phone and GPS. That's how they're finding their way home. These people are being taken down with prion disease. Misfolded proteins, prions, are destroying their brains. It's not a joke. This is a big story, and it's hidden. It's not being talked about much yet. In time, it probably will, but not right now.
I had a cousin die of prion disease, and he got the prions for the injection.
There you go.
It didn't take long. It ate his brain alive within a year.
They'll formally diagnose it as CJD. But yes, diagnosis to death. Usually a CJD diagnosis is given at the very end stage or nearly the end stage of life. They just don't look for it. There's not an easy test for it. You got to have a spinal tap usually. There's supposedly a new nasal swab test, but we don't know much about that yet. We're watching. So yes, this is a big deal. Driving is now more dangerous than ever. And these people with prion diseases will not go to the ER. They will not seek medical help in many cases. They'll just chalk it up to forgetfulness or brain fog or whatever else that might fit to make it easier for them to continue living. They're still functional. They're not functioning, but they're functional. They drive, they work, but their brains are going, like your friends. Same thing. It's very sad. All right, hold on just a minute. We'll be right back with Mitchell Henderson, another great presentation from Mitch. Stand by. And welcome back. Talking with Mitchell Henderson, a terrific survey of world geopolitics, military, civilian, doesn't matter. It's all kind of overlapping now. Go ahead, Mitch.
Okay, so let me get into survival driving. Using a vehicle after the fall will not be a viable long-term survival strategy because you're too easy to find and too vulnerable to attack in a vehicle. Also, eventually, there will be no available fuel. A vehicle will just be useful in escaping the urban areas and getting to a suitable rural area that you have pre-selected. Remaining in an urban area is like trying to survive in your car. It offers shelter from the elements, but that is about all it offers you without gasoline for your car or public utilities like water and electricity for the building that you are in. They become death traps or kill boxes that put you at a disadvantage. So, think militarily here. What does a military do? You find, you fix, you destroy. There are more risks to remaining stationary because your opponent always tries to find, fix, and destroy you. You are easier to find if you remain in one place for too long. It's better to be a moving target. If you are in a building or a park in your car, you are fixed. That spares your opponent two-thirds of the effort to destroy you. If you are mobile in a vehicle, you are still easy to find because a vehicle must travel where there is no cover and concealment. They are always in clear avenues of approach. Vehicles are harder to fix because they're not stationary. That gives your opponent only one-third of the effort to destroy you. If you are on foot, concealed in a rural environment, you are in a position where it is most difficult for your opponent to find, fix, and destroy you. Therefore, strategically, the vehicle is a tool to get you from a fixed building in an urban area to a rural area. If you already are in at least a semi-rural area, you may also want to use a vehicle to get to a more rural area. Yeah. Keep in mind that you can also walk to the rural area, but you may have to do more fighting to get there, although you will be less vulnerable along the way. Just do what you have to do. There are pros and cons to every option. Weigh them and do what is most practical for you in your situation.
Some people, Mitch, are afraid to
get you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Some people are afraid to go rural because they're not in close proximity to hospital and medical facilities. Well, I that wouldn't bother me, but that is a impediment for some reason. Well, I'm 45 minutes away from town. I need to be closer. Yeah, if you take good care of yourself, theoretically not. But how rural is too rural? I know that's a very subjective question, but what would you say for council? If you're on the outside edges of a community, you know, a couple miles, there's still homes around.
Okay, so when I say the fall, I'm talking about a situation where there's total anarchy. Okay. Other people are the threat here. The more people around, the more threats you have. So get away from people, you know?
Gotcha.
Okay, so I spent 14 years as an armored cavalry officer. I have experience with fighting in a motorized vehicle. I also have 5 years of police pursuit driving. Let me start first with the most important thing I learned from my police experience. We have all been taught to follow traffic rules to conduct how we drive on streets and roads. The first thing you must do is get rid of your tunnel vision. Where should you drive your vehicle? On the road? In your lane? We are talking about war conditions. You drive your vehicle wherever it will go. Your vehicle will go across yards, on sidewalks, on shoulders of the road, through the park and through the parking lots. As a cop, I would drive my cruiser wherever I could get the edge over the car I was pursuing. Surprisingly, most of the vehicles that I was pursuing stayed in the road. This is because they were conditioned to do that. After the fall, do not worry about roads and lanes. After the fall, do not worry about obeying traffic signs. Who will be there to give you a ticket?
Yeah,
you are worried about staying alive, not avoiding traffic tickets. The mindsets have nothing in common. You will be in a different world, so the rules are not the same. Everywhere that your vehicle can go is the highway. Free your mind from the boundaries and constraints that you have always imposed on yourself. Tanks and armored personnel carriers just go wherever they can go. It is that kind of driving that you will have to do. Also understand the vehicle and its place in your survival. In making vehicles for war, your biggest consideration is not getting hit by enemy fire. There are two ways to avoid getting hit, armor and speed. If you don't have armor, then you need speed. In designing military vehicles, you must sacrifice speed if you put on more armor. The less armor, the faster you can go. If you go slow, you need more armor because you are an easier target to hit. Speed makes it more difficult to hit you. That said, you will almost always have to use civilian vehicles that have no true armor and provide no cover. The only cover you have is the engine block. Bullets will sail right on through any other part of the car or truck. Therefore, you will have to drive fast and avoid getting hit. You may have to drive fast to avoid post-apocalyptic land pirates a la Mad Max also.
Right.
Your vehicle is a weapon. Right. You can run over people who want to harm you. The two most important obstacles to speed are curves and road anomalies like railroad tracks. They make you slow down. When trying to negotiate a curve in the road, and let me say that I'm going to tell you how to do it here. When trying to negotiate a curve in the road at speed, apply the brakes going into the curb and then hit the gas. This gives you control of your vehicle while negotiating the curve and allows you to maintain a high speed.
So okay, let's do that. Mitch, hold on. Let's do that again. I want a mental picture here. Let's do that again. I'm driving down the road, two-lane road, four-lane, whatever. I got a curb to my right. What am I going to do?
Right.
I need to go over that curb.
As you go into the curve, as you go into the curve, you're going to notice the centrifugal force is going to try to start pulling you. So as you go into the curve, hit your brakes, okay? And then right after you hit your brakes...
Oh, this is curve, not curb.
Curve.
Curve. Okay, gotcha,
curves,
sorry.
Curves, yeah,
got it.
Curve. Okay, I'll get to curve. All right. Yeah, I mean, okay.
All right.
Curves, yeah, I'm sorry. So, yeah, that gives you control of the car. If you just try it out, you'll see that if you hit your brakes when you go into a curve, you will control your vehicle a lot better, okay? And that's so you can maintain high speed. When you're going to cross a railroad track or something elevated like that, a curb, brake a little before you get to the tracks, and it will make the front of your vehicle go down. Then just before the track, hit the gas. That will make the front of your vehicle go up so that you can clear the tracks.
Takes a lot of the torque impact off the front wheels and axle, too, if you've got a four-wheel drive.
So this is how you maintain both speed and control. And those are the most important things to remember. And just doing that should give you an edge over maybe people chasing you or something.
If you
are stationary, it is easy to find and fix you in your position. All they have to do is envelop your position. Then they can either attack or lay siege to you. While traveling in a vehicle, the method of finding you and fixing you is by two stationary means and one mobile. The stationary means are ambushes and obstacles. So ambushes. They can set up an ambush along the road. If they have a brain, it will be positioned on one side of the road. If set up on both sides of the road, they will hit their own people in the crossfire. Once you are in their kill zone, they will open fire on you. If you have momentum, you can try to speed through a short ambush line. If it is small enough, you might make it through, which is exactly why they try to make them long. I have successfully done this in the case of criminal ambushes, which is hopefully what you will have to contend with after the fall.
Wow.
It is in a proper military ambush, your only option is to attack. The only way out is right through it. The ambushes are likely to be a few yards at best from the road, so charge right through them to escape. If driving through them takes 2 seconds and driving out of the kill zone takes 10 seconds, it is safer to drive through them. You might even run over a few.
Okay,
whether
question.
You drive through the ambush or into the ambushers also depends on the terrain. If they are on a ridge above you, you can obviously not drive through them. Okay.
All right, question, teacher.
Yes, go ahead.
Question. We've all seen people driving through a roadblock, an ambush, in the movies, and they get through it, and the shooters kill the people inside by shooting through the back of the car window, the back of the, if it's an SUV, the back tailgate, goes right through, as you know. Is there any reason to buy pieces of steel and put or aluminum something on the inside of the back of your tailgate or the inside of the back seat?
Just bullets. Stack sandbags back there. I mean, you know,
sandbags.
You have to size up the information. Yeah. One of the things you have to remember is always remember if the situation is hopeless, always attack. Okay. So the proper thing to do in an ambush is drive into the ambush.
Wow.
Okay. Now, when I'm talking about driving on through, if you have momentum, I'm just saying, if you stop, they can get a shot in on you. If you stop and try to drive into them, if you don't do it fast enough, you're at a disadvantage. So I'm talking about a criminal ambush where there's just maybe a couple people shooting. Okay.
Right.
You might be better off just driving through. I've done that dozens of times. Okay. I did not get hit. So that's an option if it's just a few people ambushing it. If it's a proper ambush, you need to just drive into it. Okay. That's your only answer. Just always remember, if the situation is hopeless, always, always attack. That's your only hope, is to attack.
As you are driving out,
be cautious of areas that look like good ambush sites, where the road cuts through a hill and there's an embankment on both sides of the road that keeps you from driving into it. Also, any stretch of road that has thick vegetation where they can set up an ambush should put you on alert. Often ambushes are set up as you come out of a curve in the road.
Huh.
The military loves to do that because you have
to
slow down around the curve. And then it's easier to ambush you.
I understand.
Scout these areas before you pass through them, if possible. If you kept a small drone with a camera in a Faraday cage and it still works, use that to scout the prospective ambush zone before you go through. If there is an ambush, go another way or flank it and attack it. You can also do a reconnaissance.
Hold on. I just had an idea. Yeah. Are you suggesting that people in a car that are fleeing might want to launch a small drone with a video feed back to the car so they can see ahead where they're driving? Is that another tactic?
That might be hard, difficult to do, but if you can do it, that's an excellent idea. That gives it's giving you air support, basically.
Gotcha.
But
yeah.
but at the minimum, to stop before a likely ambush spot and scout it with the drone before you go through.
Got it.
Okay, but that is either way. If you, however, you can do it. You know, if you can have eyes ahead of you, that's wonderful.
Got it.
Keep in mind, that's a point-to-point communication. You don't need a cell tower to run your drone. So,
right.
If you have it in the Faraday cage, it might work after the EMP and everything. So you can also do a reconnaissance by fire. Before you get into the ambush kill zone, open fire on the area where you think the ambushes are at. Most people who are not professionals will return fire. Then you will know where they are. Professionals have discipline, and they may not return fire and give away their position. So this only really works against amateurs, but most of your opponents, after the fall, will be amateurs. Okay?
Yes. I can't believe how much knowledge you have compared to the other men and women on the police force you were serving with. You had to know more than probably all of them together in many areas. I bet you helped a lot of people learn things.
I had a friend in the police department. I thought he would end up being a race car driver. He was a master pursuit guy, and he taught me how to do power turns and all kinds of stuff. It was him.
Right.
He transferred his knowledge to me.
Wow.
So,
got it.
Right. So now let's get to obstacles. So you got ambushes, you got obstacles. Obstacles are another method of finding, fixing, and destroying you. They will put things in the road to slow you down or stop you. Slowing you down defeats the speed defense of a vehicle and makes you easier to kill. And stopping you makes it even easier yet. Just take it for granted that all obstacles are booby-trapped, covered by a sniper, or are covered with a full-blown ambush. All obstacles. If you see an obstacle, don't approach it, you know. Okay, so let me tell you how to clear an obstacle. To clear an obstacle, you first set out security to protect you from snipers or an ambush. Then, with a very long piece of rope, tie one end to the obstacle and the other to your vehicle and pull it away in an effort to set off any explosives. But beware, what I like to do is place the explosives where I think the vehicle will be that pulls the obstacle from.
Sure.
I usually placed them 50 foot back because that was the average distance people pull from. So carry a 100-foot piece of rope, okay, in your car. And obstacles are primarily for counter mobility, so the most likely thing covering it will be explosive booby traps. Second most likely will be snipers, and they are often used to spring ambushes also. So the bottom line is that in dealing with ambushes and obstacles, there are many iterations of how they're set up, and so there are many risks. At the outset, when things have just fallen apart, these things will be less of a problem. So what I'm talking about, you have to take a risk with ambushes and obstacles if you're going to stay in your car for a long term, okay? If you're just using the car to get out of the city and then dumping it, okay, you're not going to run into these problems. As anarchy spreads, they will become more of a problem. So get out early to a good place where there are less people and more forests. Even in the Great Plains and in the deserts, there are strips of forest along rivers. I have been in some very dry deserts in the West that even have long groves of cottonwood forest along dry arroyos. Those give you concealment. Driving in a dry arroyo can also give you less visibility, and I have driven many. Just remember that if you drive in sand or deep mud, you have to keep your momentum up or you'll get stuck, okay? Driving across open country, you must go slower because it is often crossed by dry arroyos, and it would be painful if you dropped into one. But keep in mind, if you're going cross-country, it's just like my booby trap thing in Korea, okay, who's going to spring ambushes out in the middle of nowhere? They spring ambushes and put obstacles on roads, not just willy-nilly out in the middle of nowhere, okay? So keep that in perspective, okay? At night, when you stop, put your vehicle into a high position and put tree branches over it to reduce the chances of it being seen. You cannot afford to get hurt, and you need to avoid open combat to avoid getting hurt. So when you come to a possible ambush site, scout it out. If there is one set up, this might be the point that you start traveling on foot, because you can give the ambush site a wide berth. The same goes for obstacles. The third problem when driving is the meeting engagement. That is when you run into another vehicle on the road. It may be someone trying to attack you and take your ship. The only thing to do here is attack viciously and relentlessly. The attacking vehicle has an advantage over the defending vehicle, and the pursuing vehicle has an absolute advantage over the retreating vehicle. To sum up, you should only use a vehicle to initially get away from the urban area, because every day after that, it gives people time to get set up for predatory ambushes, obstacles, and form mobile raiders to attack you. I just want to say, I was talking to Ryan Wendland, and he had another thought that was good thinking. Don't just look at land vehicles to make your escape. Consider marine and air escape. If your big city is on a coastal river, you can commandeer a boat to take you away from the urban area without having to worry about traffic jams. In a kayak or a canoe, you can get 20 to 30 miles away in 10 hours on a lake. Going with the flow of a river or a current can make you go faster. If it is a small sailboat, you can get about 50 miles in 10 hours on a lake. The longer the sailboat, the faster the hull speed. A small fishing boat with an outboard motor can get you 50 miles in 10 hours. And a speedboat can get you 500 miles in 10 hours. Do not hug the coastline, because you will be vulnerable to attack. But it would be wise to keep the shoreline in sight for navigation purposes. Also, you are looking for a suitable rural area to land in. The boat is for escape only, like a motor vehicle. It offers you no cover or concealment. If you have to rest on shore, camouflage your boat if you can. If you are a pilot, you will be able to get far away fast. Okay? So when you're thinking of transportation, there's motorcycles. There's, you know, even a mini bike, a dirt bike, you know, whatever. Whatever is handy. Anything to get your speed, because speed, like I said, gives you protection. Uh-huh. And if you get out in the woods first, then you're kind of ahead of the game, okay?
You know, here, I think just to sum this up real quickly, as far as your home goes, if you're at all able to get even 20 minutes outside of town, that's not far at all. You're going to be way better off than being at the edge of town or in the edge of town, so to speak. The idea is put space between you and the zombie apocalypse that's going to happen in most coordinated living towns, like any normal residential city. There's going to be problems, any big city, but especially a residentially oriented city.
Keep in mind that in the city, that's where control is going to happen. They will enslave you. The government take you under control. And as I mentioned previously, in the city, I've talked to gangs. I've talked to La M.A., the Mexican mafia. I've talked to the Crips. They have areas staked out. They're going to control all the people in those areas.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so in town, your life is in somebody else's hands in the city. Get away from town. Your life is in your own hands. Okay.
Gotcha, yeah.
And who can you trust, you know?
I know some areas
that have, like, a lot of preppers live, like a countryside place, and all the preppers know each other and they're organized. Now they can actually somewhat defend themselves, because they can put out sentries and guards, and they can have observation posts that they can man, and they can get forewarning of somebody coming, and they can marshal the forces against who's coming in to attack them. Okay?
Another quick question for homeowners. Do you like the idea of replacing large glass windows? I don't mean huge, but glass windows with bulletproof glass. Say it's a fixed glass window. Would you invest in that to keep people from having an easy shot at you through an open window? Or not open, but I mean a viewable window. They can see you through it. Is bulletproof glass worth the time and the energy?
Well, I think it's pretty expensive, and you got to remember that you may need to break that glass so you can shoot people and stuff too. Okay. So you may be limiting
Very
them,
good.
But you don't want to limit yourself either.
Very good. Okay. So. All right. I want to wrap it up here real quick. We got maybe a minute or so. Anything you want
to
add?
If you are in the building and you're shooting, don't ever stick your gun out the window to shoot people because they can see where you're at. You stay, get back in the room. Ideally, like in the military, what we do is stack up sandbags and make a defensive position inside the room where people looking in the window can't see you. And then from there, you shoot out the window to and control the area you're at. Then they don't know your precise position inside the building. Okay.
Very good.
So you can see this in videos in Israel. You see the Israelis sticking their guns out the window to shoot at the enemy. Poor training. Or you can see Hamas, you'll see them shooting their RPGs. Notice that they're not sticking it out windows. They get back in the room away from the
window
and then shoot.
I have noticed.
Yes, professional.
Indeed.
That's
all right.
Well-trained.
Very good.
Okay.
Mitchell, thank you. We got to run, but that was a terrific amount of information again, and we look forward to next week. Thank you for everybody.
Okay. Next Tuesday, I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Next time.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, my friend. Take care.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Good night. Mitchell Henderson, the one and only. He's got a grasp of survival like no one I know. We will be back tomorrow night on Tuesday and hope to have the pleasure of your company then. A lot of information tonight. Enjoy, share, and think about it. Back tomorrow.